Welcome to the Climate Hour. I'm your host, Bob Grove. Today, we're going to talk about engaging with Black communities on climate. Over the past few years, we've interviewed lots of corporate executives and government officials. Many of them raised up climate equity and the importance of engaging with communities of color. I myself often point out that the people least responsible for climate change are the ones most impacted. But then where's the action? What do I do? What does anybody do? How do we engage with Black communities and other communities of color to effectively fight climate change? I really don't have a good answer, and I don't think the officials and executives we've spoken with did either. Today, I've invited Black community organizers, activists, freedom fighters, and farmers to tell us what they need to fight climate change. We're joined on Zoom by Spencer Parker. Spencer is a social activist focused on public relations, self-sustainability, and the owner of the Urban Alpha Gun Club. Hi, Spencer.
How's it going, Bob?
Nicolette Page Davis and Darian Davis are community organizers, Pan-African freedom fighters, and co-founders of the Kansas City Urban Farm Co-op. Hi, Nicolette.
Peace and love, y'all.
Darian, how are you?
Hey, what up, people?
So let's start with a really general question. How are climate issues perceived in your community? Let's start with Spencer.
Well, I think you could probably ask a quarter of us, and that's about how many will actually have a decent answer for you.
I was going to say the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really don't concern ourselves with things such as climate. And it's really sad because a lot of our ancestors' traditional ways of life really dealt with more with nature and less with convenience and tech. And as society, you know, keeps driving along, we kind of distance ourselves from those same values, those same things that we used to practice on a regular. I think that is why we as a culture in this country, from marginalized communities all the way to the rich, we have a problem with looking in the mirror, taking accountability. I think that's a lot of my community's problem, at least, especially when it comes around to this.
So, Nicolette, you agree like a quarter of your community may even be aware of climate change issues?
Yes, unfortunately, that is something that I couldn't, you say how many people in the community would be aware of it? I don't hear that conversation hardly at all, unfortunately.
Darian, what's your opinion?
My opinion is that people in my community, and I'm talking about poor Black people, we're worrying about how we're going to feed our kids today. And we're worrying about priority issues of just paying rent and just maintaining. And the last thing on our mind is talking about the climate. And one of the main reasons is because my community feels like we have no control whatsoever anyway. On the climate. And so why should we spend our time and energy on that when my baby's sitting up here crying because he ain't got no diapers?
I hear you.
I absolutely understand that.
Spencer, talk more about that. No control.
I think priorities affect our community a lot differently than others, right? When it comes to social priorities outside of individual community priorities. So, you know, we've never received things as repair. We've never received things as subsidies. We're just now receiving things as opportunities. And even those are slim, few, and far between. And they're not as lucrative as other opportunities in other communities. For instance, when our people graduate college, on average, we still make less than a white high school graduate. So when we're thinking of social issues that affect the world community as a whole, we put those on the back burner first because the world put us on the back burner first. Mm-hmm. And we don't feel as if, even if we were to talk about that, just like we talk about anything else, it is always shelved. It mm-hmm. is never taken serious. It is correct. It always has to be turned dang near into a religion before mm-hmm. anybody wants to take any type of action. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are so many other battles that my community needs to fight within ourselves as well as socially. mm-hmm. that this one is just so far down the totem pole. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's probably the most important, because what is a community without Earth? You know, I laugh to keep from crying, but honestly, like, what is a community without air and drinkable water?
Absolutely. And
decent infrastructure to send those things to the people that need it. You know, what are our plants without carbon dioxide at normal levels? What is our atmosphere without an ozone? It's almost like we've taken pollution as a normality. And Earth is trying to remind us in every natural disaster that ain't normal. It's just not. It's not. A small cloud over an entire metropolis is not normal.
So low awareness of climate as an issue, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, my perception is that it's impacting your communities deeply, if not more than other communities.
Without a doubt.
So there is a contradiction. I mean, there's obviously a problem there. Your community is being overly impacted by the climate issues we're facing.
And that's not what they're thinking
about. So low. Yep. How do we deal with that? I mean,
I wouldn't even say the awareness is low. We know that our community is, it's not that we don't know, Bob. It's that we have so many other things we have to fight all at the same time. And it's hard to prioritize the social issues ahead of the personal ones, such as getting our babies diapers, finding decent jobs to be able to allow us to do so. You know, whenever all of our social issues that we would deem personal, but they're reported on way more than other less marginalized and non-marginalized communities, right? Our inability to gain generational wealth, our inability to provide sufficient influences for our kids to have decent mindsets growing up. Those are all highlighted and heavily scrutinized, right? So where does climate fall into that? How are we supposed to care about that too? And that's what's tough, because only when I say a quarter of our community could give you a decent answer, unfortunately, that quarter falls along class lines. Because the poor and downtrodden of us cannot care about climate right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not where their focus is. So you're going to have to ask the people that can afford and not worry about their next day, where they're going to get their next meal from. And it sounds like victim mentality, but this is reality, man. And a lot of the things that are portrayed in our community are some are overdrawn and some are underreported. I would like to see more true realism reporting on things. And this is probably like as real as I can get, man. They can't care, Bob. They can't care. And they're the most affected. Because when a new factory goes up, where is it going, Nicolette? What's it affecting?
Right next to our communities, right next
exactly.
to our land.
Exactly.
Okay, so, and this gets me to the point of, we know what the problem is, but guess what? White people don't want to pay reparations, because what is that going to do? It's going to reach into white people's pockets, because they want to kumbaya and hold hands and say, I'm sorry, and then walk away and think that's it. Oh, no, we got to have money. We need to have money to fund the education system in the Black community, to fund the urban farmers, to repair the damages that were done. Painting the street with Black Lives Matter, sorry, but that's a waste of money to me. Put that into our schools, into the mental health systems. I understand changing a street sign. I do understand that, and I do appreciate that. But even that, I understand Juneteenth, giving Black people the Juneteenth celebration. But what? Even that don't make sense to me, because as human beings, we deserve to be free, period.
What did Malcolm X say? The man will give us symbolic victories to pacify us from actual ones that matter.
Yes. And it's yes. Yes. And so it's the money. It's the money, and it's the lack of accountability that is in the white community, because it is hard. It's hard to look at history and the atrocities that were done. But we have to look and take a hard look at history and say, how do we learn from this and how do we repair it? You can't glance at the history. We got to actually stand in that ish And
you know, I think you make a great point, because a lot of the times when we talk about reparations, the first question out of folks that oppose its mouth is, well, what are they going to do with that money? Well, I'll tell you what. After however many years Flint hasn't had decent water lines to deliver water to their kids, I think if they had money, they'd have probably replaced them pipes a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I think if Standing Rock had money, they would have been able to put up a decent enough fight against the same people that didn't want that pipeline going through their community. And that's how they ended up in Standing Rock in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you make a good point on that.
So it's not even just money, though, but it's the systemic oppression that was put into place during slavery that is still prevalent today. It still affects us today. It's a lot of work to undo it, but it's possible. And I believe that the white community doesn't really want to undo that work because it's so much. It's a lot of accountability, and it can be really hard. It is hard, but it's possible, and it's what needs to be done. We say, okay, we know what the problem is, but how do we solve it? Well, we also have to say, where did this problem come from? Systemic oppression.
Who has the money to open those factories en masse? Right. And mm-hmm. then not and not give the community that they open it up next to any subsidies. They'll dump waste in their communities. How many streets down the hood have you drove down and you'll see a plot of trees, and at the base of the trees, it's a ton of tires? Mm-hmm. Do you think the people that are living in the houses right up that block put those tires there? Or do you think it was somebody else just passing through and saw a downtrodden community where property values are low and said, you know what, who's going to care?
Yeah. Something that my husband, Darian, said to me yesterday that really hit my soul is, right now, our community, it is a state of emergency for our community. It really is. We have an extreme problem. And at this time, extreme problems like this deserve extreme solutions. And if we don't get solutions sooner than later, if we don't get the community to back us up, if we don't get reparations soon, oh man, it's going to get ugly.
All of the things that push crime have been backed in by poverty, according to all of these studies in the recent years. But I think we have a even bigger issue just in the mindsets of our community.
Yes.
Because the folks in our community that do care about this, Nicolette, we're corny. You know what I mean? We're whack. We ain't cool. Our people don't want to use their brains long enough to think about this. They, like, how many times, I asked Bob this a few months ago. I'm sure he remembers. How many times were you in school where you saw the cool kid was the same as the intelligent? They were one and the same. Not never.
Right.
Never in your life.
But where does this come from? It is coming from who has ownership and control of the media.
Media and entertainment.
Yes. Who? Yep. What is being fed to our children through the media?
Yep.
Who owns the media?
Yep.
Okay.
I agree. The same people that's opening up the factories next to our houses. The same folks.
Funding. Money is important because we can make the intelligent Black people, the ones who are farming. I mean, there's so many different definitions of intelligent Black people, but we can make it look cool. You know how we make it look cool? We put art and entertainment behind that.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I think that is the answer. And I think that's where we get funding, because we can't just keep asking with our hands out knowing we're not going to get a check.
Right.
You can't keep asking the same people looking in the same direction like, hey, care about us finally. They're not.
We need funding. And it'd be great if the funding. So when it comes to reparations, it's like reparations given from white people, but also I would love to see way more Black millionaires because we need to have ownership and control. The Black man, the Black woman needs to have ownership and control of their people and their people's stuff.
I absolutely agree. But what do our millionaires do right now?
The millionaires are just high paid slaves.
There we go.
So she said the key words when you say ownership and control. See, the LeBrons and the Oprahs, they don't control their own situation. They have white handlers. And they know that if they make certain moves, that's going to mess the with NBA, their paycheck.
If LeBron says the wrong thing, NBA can drop him. He the 20th season. Now they got Ja Morant. They got Carlin.
So ultimately, we have a cultural problem where we're living in an individualistic world. But
there we go.
When you really look at where we came from, it was all about community.
All tribal communities. There we go.
About something bigger than just ourselves and our families. We're doomed. But we can sit up here and keep asking the enemy to give us a handout all day long. But until we hold our own selves accountable
and start
charging them up and saying, hey, why come you didn't do this? Why come you didn't do this? And guess what? Well, what if we had a coalition of all the most famous influential rappers and they started saying, hey, all these white people brands y'all talking about,
they don't care about you. Balenciaga ain't cool no more. Exactly. Dolce and Gabbana don't care about you. Yes, sir.
You know what? Black lives matters. How about black money matters? That's what we're talking about.
Ashe. Yes.
Let's talk about some more of those issues. Let's break down. Let's break down some of these issues. I hear you talking. There's a lot of passion here. You know, coming from a climate perspective, I'm looking for solutions. I'm looking for actions. I mean, and those are difficult. I've heard you talk about education. You know, there's not the funding for the education. How do we bring that kind of education, even if we had the money? What does that look like? What does that look like on the ground? What are we funding and what are we teaching the communities?
I think what we should be trying to teach is self-unity and finance and governance, self-sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we were
more in our communities.
I don't even think the schools can help us, Nicolette. And I don't mean to sound pessimistic. I think we need to take a more communal approach to education as well. I think because even when they learn in the schools, right? Like I went to school, I graduated K through 12th grade all the way, didn't even go to college, right? It doesn't take rocket science. All it takes is grown man rationale to know in my line of work, I'll probably never use A squared plus B squared equals C squared, but I still know what it is and what it's used for today and haven't touched it since high school. You know, not everybody's going to be an engineer or a carpenter that needs to know that, but they teach it to everybody. This generalized societal standard of education is still not a good one to begin with. I think we need more direct, personable learning. There is a system, I think it's over in Japan, where they'll take the first, in elementary school, they're learning general arithmetic all the way through algebra and geometry, because that's when you're really the youngest is when you're really like the biggest sponge. You can learn all of those languages and it's not hard. You really don't even know what you're learning, right? You just soak it up. Well, by the time they get to middle school, they get a counselor, they get a person that they sit down with, and that person asks them, what do you want to do? We've shown you all of these different things of all these things you can utilize. What do you want to do with them? And if a person says, I want to be a basketball player, then that person is going to embark on a journey of classes that teaches them nothing about anything else but basketball. If they say they want to be an engineer, they're going to take a journey of classes that teaches them nothing else but engineering. You know what I mean? Because how do you fail at what you want to know? That's a start.
I think that's what history has shown us in ancient Africa on how they did educate children. They watched them and they said, what is this child interested in? What is this child's talents?
Yep.
You would even get names and purposes saying this is what we need you to be for our community. Mm-hmm. We've gotten away from that. This system right now is about making employees and soldiers. And absolutely, we know that. But back to the question, practically, this is what we do. We start on a local level, right? And you have to organize the people. Mm-hmm. See, the reason why they don't make no dumps over in certain affluent neighborhoods is because they organize. They go down to City Hall. When it's on the ballot, they show up and they vote. Yep. We don't do that here because we're too busy trying to figure out how to eat. And so what we need to do in our community, first of all, we need some type of money. We just do. We can't get away from that. And then you take the money and you organize and you get 12 bus loads full of Black people and you take them down to City Hall, because as being a community organizer, one of the things I found out is your council members can't do nothing if you don't make them. You have to go up there. You have to remind them who they work for. And you have to put pressure on the system so that they can look at their constituents and say, hey, y'all see these people outside. These are the people who we work for. So we're going to have to make some ordinances, some laws. We're going to have to change some.
I think you hit the nail on the head with the communal way of thinking. But we should swap out what we teach in elementary school today with finance and governance early on, because if they know it by the time they're ready to graduate age, right, because we wouldn't have the same schooling, but graduate age, 18, 19, if they understand that, then by the time they're ready to vote, they already can see the BS in people's policies. They already can see the ramifications when one of these politicians speaks, you know what I mean, and what the negative effects of their said policies would have on their communities, to be better prepared to vote, to be better prepared for their communities. Right. I think that is a communal way of learning, pooling kids together in things that they want to know after a certain age. And before that age, things that we know that we fail short on. We fail short on finance. Our people don't have money because we had no money. We didn't know money because we didn't get money. We weren't paid. How are you going to know what you never receive? Okay.
Science play in this education? I mean, we talk in the climate movement, we see a lot of science deniers. What role does science have in your education system?
I think experiences in a communal environment, such as like watching a kid have an asthma attack, those are the inspirations that leads kids down the path of choosing those careers of engineering, atmospheric analysis, whatever we need to change climate change, whatever we need to build better infrastructure to deliver resources to the people, so that way we're not polluting everything and anything we touch. I think those types of experiences make kids ask questions like, what can I do to help that person? What can I do to beat this problem? Oh, we're driving our kids into LA and they can literally see the smog over Los Angeles when we're going on vacation. Daddy, what's that? How can we suck all of that air? Can we build a plane with a vacuum? Boom. Now we're sparking ideas in our kids that are long lasting in their education. And they'll forever ask questions, picking up those little pieces of crumbs that we saw as a community that they were interested in, that we dropped for them. Like, hey, are they still interested? We're keeping these crumbs while they're learning finance and governance. All right, we're 13. You remember you had that idea of building that plane with that vacuum and sucking up all the smog and over LA, you know, you remember that? Yeah, I remember that. I still want to do that. It's time. It's time. Our kids is it, man. They're it.
Yeah,
it's the thing. But you know, on a personal note, Spencer, we've got 5 children, and there's been several instances where we say, you know what, we need a better educational system for our children. So we went on a search. We said, where can we find some independent schools? Where can we find some independent African-centered schools for our African babies? And guess what? We came up short. And that's what I'm talking about. Until we organize and put some real resources about building some real institutions, we're just spinning our wheels. The only institution that the Black community has is the church. And guess what? The biggest wealth transfer is Monday morning when all the Black churches take all the Black people's money and put it in the white people's bank.
So they can invest in their communities, man.
It's systematic.
But
you got to organize.
All right, so check this out. You know why they don't know that?
Well, they don't teach us financial literacy.
There we go. How many people know that when they put their money in the bank is using it to invest? The bank is literally taking their money that's supposedly in their account that just reads as a number on a screen until you actually pull it out on ATM, right? How many people know that the bank is using that money actively as they go store it actively against their own community? How many of us know that?
You're listening to the Climate Hour. I'm your host, Bob Grove. We're speaking with Nicolette Page Davis, Darian Davis, and Spencer Parker about engaging with Black communities on climate. Darian, can you talk a little bit about food sovereignty in the urban core?
I'm one of the co-founders of the Kansas City Urban Farm Co-op, and one of the reasons we started, it was right around Mike Brown's situation, and tensions were rising to the point to where we were expecting some type of military enforcement. We were thinking that tanks were going to start rolling down the lines, and they were going to rolling down the roads, and they were going to declare martial law. We thought about, well, what does that look like? And we thought about the highways being shut down. We thought about the trains being stopped. We thought about the planes being stopped, and we thought, how many hours would it take for our grocery store to run out of food? As I was helping Drake Taylor build Nile Valley Aquaponics off of 29th and Wabash, right off of Prospect in the heart of the hood in Kansas City, we had a lot of kids that was helping volunteering, and it hurt my heart when we talked to these kids and I would ask them about food. And most of those kids had single parent households with no vehicle. And they told me that they got their food from the liquor store and Family Dollar. Mm-mm-mm. High price, low value foodstuffs that, of course, ends up messing with them mentally, messing with them when they're in school. And, you know, this is all a part of things about the climate, about the things that they put in our food and everything. And so we said, you know, we'd be foolish to sit up here and depend on the enemy who has historically shown us that they're in a business of genocide. They want us gone. And that's why the chemtrails is going above the hood. You know, that's part of it. And so we saying, hey, we got to do at least something to try to put on people's mind that, you know what, it's actually important to be in control of your food. Our motto is the people who feed themselves, lead themselves.
Oh, hey. Hello. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about self-sustainability in the Black community.
I would like to add that there is a common theme around self-sustainability and food sovereignty that talks about the food desert. And I recently read an article, gosh, I wish I could remember the Black sister who was talking, the Black urban farmer sister. Boy, she's had some good stuff to say. But what she said, one of the things she said that stuck with me was, we need to start calling the food desert a food apartheid. Apartheid, because a desert is a natural occurrence versus the apartheid, which is systemic and will help people to better understand that this isn't just a natural occurrence. No, the food, quote unquote, desert is something that was systemically put into place.
It wasn't just a natural occurrence. I like it.
I'm just saying.
I like it.
I love like what it. You said.
A food apartheid. I like that.
Food apartheid. We need to start saying that more because it opens people's minds who may not even know what that word means. What does apartheid mean? And then you start going down the truth of our history. The truth of our history is what we need to face. As I said, to figure out the solution.
And the truth of our history is this. Dr. Neely Fully said it quite appropriately. He said, until you understand racism, white supremacy, every other human activity that you study will confuse you because it's all entangled. And we don't want to get away and smooth coat things and talk about all these fairy tale type of things. No, it is what it is. It's a war, an active war going on right now. And it's been going since they kidnapped us and took our identities and brought us over here. We're a special group of people. We're the only people who don't have no flag or no name or no real culture. We don't know where we come from. All the other immigrants or even the Native Americans,
they have a home to go back to.
They have that. Yep. They stole us, and then we're the only group that built this country for no pay. And everybody else, the Native Americans, they got what they ain't got to pay taxes. They got casinos, they got land. The Japanese, the Jews, all these different groups that were supposedly harmed.
Do you know how many times America has paid reparations?
They paying reparations to the Ukrainians right now, giving them a free house care.
No. Let's call it what it is. That's not reparations. That is government aid. Hey, there you go. Now, here's the finance that we need to know. How does the government give 40 some odd billion dollars to Ukraine when we're trillions of dollars in debt? How do we do that? Those are loans. We're pulling more loans. So we're extending our debt to pull more loans to send it to other countries when we got communities right here that can't grow their own food. Concrete jungles.
Right.
I mean, what farm are you going to find in New York? Now, check it. What do you become when you die and they put you in the ground?
Dirt.
Exactly. What does dirt grow?
Food.
What do you eat?
And everything else. Food.
What do you eat and where does it go?
Go back in the dirt.
And what does it become?
More food.
Thank you.
There ain't no such thing as wasting nature.
We got 364 million Americans in this country. They all have capabilities that can pertain to growing food. So food apartheids are not necessary. What it takes is willingness to want to be self-sustainable. Michael Rinder, Killer Mike, he was at a Revolt conference like 5 or 6 years ago, and he said something that stuck with me ever since I heard it. He asked the crowd, he was like, how many of you fish? How many of you hunt? How many of you grow your own food? How many of you practice martial arts? How many of you shoot firearms? How many of you jog and exercise and keep yourself in tip-top shape? Not enough hands are raised. And he said, y'all not ready for revolution. You're not ready. Because revolution means you're tearing down that system that you depend on to eat. So if you need the system to eat and you want to tear it down, what do you do then? Die? The funny part about this is what supplies oxygen to the atmosphere?
Trees, plants.
What do we breathe out of our bodies?
Carbon dioxide?
Yes, absolutely. What do plants eat?
What we breathe.
Carbon dioxide.
What we breathe. Thank you. Bob, you know what? You're a smart guy, Bob.
It's the science. I've studied the science.
You're a smart guy, Bob. I'll tell you what. You know, you're a smart guy, Bob. So if we're growing our own food, becoming self-sustainable, using the stuff that comes out of our bodies to then feed those plants, the stuff that we breathe out of our bodies to then feed those plants, and they give us the oxygen we need to breathe to continue the cycle, why do we have a liquor store on every corner? That's what I mean by it's not a natural occurrence, it's by design. That's why I like that term so much, right? We have to take the sidewalk patches of grass. A lot of houses in Kansas City ain't got enough yard. You know what I mean? It ain't enough. Nor is it fertile enough to grow.
Right.
We'd have to do the square foot gardens in every yard, buying dirt from Home Depot outside of our community, spending more money outside of our communities, mm-hmm. Right, Darian?
There are a lot of vacant lots that we've been petitioning the city to let us use to grow food.
I feel you. What does it take to really maintain and lock down those lots? You said it earlier.
Resources. Then of course you got to soil test everything because of all the pollution that they just lock down houses and bury them in the hood. They don't even take the stuff away.
The house that I was born in right now off 99th and Hardesty off Blue Ridge is still standing and nobody lives in it and it's not condemned. A German man owns it and he's owned it for the last 9 years and he does not want nobody to rent it out and he ain't selling.
No, he's a speculator.
Okay. No, he's waiting.
Right.
On gentrification.
Yeah, that's what a speculator does.
He's waiting on property value to then build equity in the home that he owns without him having to do. He just waiting. What did they just put over there off Bannister? Brand new Price Chopper. Brand new Taco Bell. About to build some new stuff at Bannister Mall's old location. What do you think is going to drive that property value up? Because my old house is literally in walking distance from that Price Chopper.
Yeah, I'm very intimate. Right there. I'm very intimate with that project. That was the largest tax subsidy that the state of Missouri has ever given to a private company that we gave to Cerner. And
they want to leave already.
Yeah. And then most of their workers were imported. They didn't even take the people who were paying the taxes to put them to give them jobs. They had people from other states and countries come in to do that job. And we protested that and got an ordinance passed to say, hey, if we're going to use our tax money, then a percentage of the jobs need to come back to the people who's paying for it.
We lose these battles, D, because we don't organize. We have to get our people to care enough.
We got that passed because it was about organization. But I'm going to tell you this, Spencer. It's a few of us like me and you out here and my wife that will do it for free just because we're passionate about it. But you know what? It's not sustainable.
I know
it. People get burnt out. People get tired. And next thing you know, we got to go back to work. And so, it stops.
Bob, this all ties in together, man, because the youth is important. Because the youth carries on that sustainability. But if we don't get our youth better influences, right? Because here's how I feel. Jay-Z from Harlem. What, Brooklyn, Harlem, one of the two, right? How come there's still liquor stores on every corners and bodegas and everything? He could have built grocery stores on them mugs. I mean, he got enough money. You know what I mean? Oprah's from Chicago. Why did it take Chance the Rapper, who's 23, to walk up in there and say, y'all fell in our school system for our kids? We pay the wrong people. We think they for us, and then they get money, and then tell us go buy fine art that we can't afford. That helps nobody from where they came from. It doesn't. Right? That's why we need the youth. We need the youth to know those people ain't who to follow. Michael Jordan's ain't who to follow. Stop buying his shoes.
Right.
That ain't who we need to follow. If you're gonna follow somebody and not lead, don't choose that one.
That's right. That's right, Spencer. But let me tell you this. You hitting it with education, but the reality is this. Our children are not learning from school. They're learning from propaganda. They're learning from music and movies. They're learning from what's cool and what their peers say cool. And so until we take back hip-hop specifically, take back our music and own it. See, the reality is the people who own the music, those are not us. And they have a plan,
an agenda,
and then they invest. They're the biggest investors in the prison industrial complex. So they need a pipeline. Yep. So there's no empty vacancies in the prison. What better than music? Start with the kids. Start with the sponges.
Yep.
Let's tell them this goofy stuff is cool.
Yep. You know.
I'm hearing the complexity of the situation. I mean, trying to talk about something like climate. Yeah, there's so many issues standing in the way before your community can even get there.
Exactly, man. Oh my goodness, so much. There's so much, Bob.
Absolutely.
From education to our culture being hijacked and driven in a way that negatively affects us, from all the way to down to our finances to be able to feed ourselves. Before we can even get to climate, man, there's so many more important things that we have to put at the forefront of our minds. And climate way back here, dog. Everybody got to pay taxes, Bob. And we know the IRS is so underfunded that they can't go after billionaires. So who do they go after to meet quotas of audits? Us. All right. And our people don't know finances. So usually that audit is successful for them, failures for us. Hmm. And those tax dollars are then used to build railroad cars in communities that do not support us. The black dollar spends in 6 hours. 6 hours after the majority of our community is paid, their paycheck is gone. 6 hours. Everything is already accounted for, from buying food to diapers to paying bills to keeping lights on to making make sure you got phones so you guys can communicate with each other just to say I need something. Because ain't everybody, and no one's just randomly popping up in a black community with no money saying, I got gifts for you. Them must be hand-me-downs. They gotta be, you know?
And if it ain't a hand-me-down, it's strings attached. We'll give you this money as long as you do what we say.
Exactly. So they siphon money out of the community in so many different ways. And when I say we pay the wrong people, that's just another way. Because that's somebody that someone else put in front of us to be able to think we should give them our money. If Jay-Z and Taylor Swift were on the same record label, the way record labels work, Jay-Z's got to turn his album in for the record label to be able to approve it before they put money behind it to push it with a publishing budget and a marketing budget. Taylor Swift has to do the same thing. Imagine if they swapped content. You think Taylor Swift gonna get her album approved by these record label execs to go send a whole bunch of messaging into the white community, talk about sell crack, shoot each other over some J's, I banged a dude girl. Why do they approve it for our community?
Because we can't organize. We're too divided.
So they take the sponges. They know the kids is gonna ask for that for Christmas. So then they take that money. Right? Jay-Z then goes and makes a deal with the NFL. And the first thing he says is, I think we're done with kneeling. I think we're going to end the protest, even though I was never even a part of it. We're going to end the voice that a whole bunch of people was ready to get behind, even though I had no part. They will take it in so many different ways. Jay-Z ain't putting no money back into the community. That's taking it out of the community. The railroad car, that's going down Broadway. That ain't East of Truce. All of the money that people pay to ride that thing ain't going back to the black community. All of our tax dollars get siphoned out. All of our money gets siphoned out. We paying Spire, we paying KCP&L, we paying the cable company, and none of that, all of that campaign money going to politicians that ain't going to do for us. They're going to purposely not do for us. This is how Flint, Michigan happened. This is how everything happens. You take it out of us, and then you say, well, y'all need to go vote.
Right. You know what I mean? And you know what? But that's real. Maybe not on a national level as far as voting, because you got, you know, the Electoral College, which is goofy.
The only thing that's gonna matter is locally. Yes, sir.
But locally, check this out. Every time I go to a city budget meeting, how many of us is in there? See, that's where the power is. Now, we got billions of dollars of budget for this city, but we're not holding our elected officials accountable on what we think they should do with the money.
Out of that last budget meeting, how much money went to the police department? Do you remember the number?
I don't remember the number, but I know we should have a budget for community policing.
It was right. $255 million.
Oh my goodness.
They got $255 million. Now, here's the question. Do you know how many crimes were committed and how many they solved last year?
Right. Tim.
Less than 25% were solved, bro. So how are we going to raise your budget? Is that not an F? Are we going to raise the police budget for an F?
Man.
How are we going to take our tax dollars and pay the cops for an F? This is why the kids matter, because we will literally die off the ignorance. It will die off. I grew up out here in the burbs. I've been living in Lee Summit since 1997, man. These kids do not agree with their parents, and their parents hate it. And that's across all of the communities, man. Because no black person out here or in the hood been the one stopping them to get them from where they want to go. They see it. They can hear it from their parents all they want to, bro. But they have not experienced what they've heard at home in real life. They haven't seen it. If anything, they've been invited to too many cookouts, you ask me. We need to invite more of our own people to the cookout. Why are we keep inviting the guests? We the hell. We the hell. Who are we impressing?
I want to kind of come back to the beginning. I mean, at the beginning, I talked about climate equity and the fact that, you know, the community keeps raising that up and that I didn't have a solution. I haven't heard a solution today either. That question is out there. What do we do about climate? Darian, I hear you talking about urban farming, food. I think that is so important. That is such an important element for everybody.
I'm, I'm going to tell you a real life practical thing that we already worked on. Hemp, industrial hemp. Ooh. Sequesters carbon monoxide from the atmosphere. And literally, if we went to the government and said, hey, even the local government, to be an example for the rest of the nation, and say, hey, we have an alternative for plastic bags, for plastic water bottles, for all these petroleum-based products, we have a natural, self-sustainable way to cut out fossil fuels, make a law that say all the Walmarts, all these stores, no more plastic bags if it ain't made out of this sustainable thing. But see, you got to get funding behind those type of things. You got to get government support. This is all systematic. We got these babies got all kind of ideas on how to make the world a better place.
But it gotta equate to dollars for somebody. Look, check it. Darian, I feel you. I feel you. So I agree with that. And I think all like we were saying earlier when we were talking about growing food, all plant matter, as much of the square footage of our neighborhoods that we can cover in food, sustainable food for other species like the dying monarch. Monarch is getting endangered. We could be planting wildflowers to help sustain that. These, you know what I mean? All of that matters. But our number one problem with that is an agenda-backed, politically demanding denial of science, okay? And the reason why they want to deny science is because money. All of these oil companies, they want a share in the new energy before it hits the free market. And if they can't corner the market with one of their own companies for the new energy while transitioning off the fossil fuel, then they're just going to vote no, because it's going to ruin their profit margins. It's going to ruin their projections. It's going to ruin all of that. They're just going to vote no. So if they don't get the bill, the contract from the federal government to say like, hey, Shell, hey, Enron, you know what? We want you guys to produce all of the West Coast solar panels or all of the Midwest wind turbines. And you guys get the contract. If they don't get the handout that says, here, we're going to subsidize your loss in revenue from your oil companies with this new energy that we're going to transition to and write laws for in the future anyway, they're going to vote no. And they're going to hop on their yacht and go to a more self-sustainable country until we get together.
Right. Follow the dollar. You said it. That's the truth. That's the truth. It's the money. It's the green.
I would love to grow trees. I would love to. But they're going to stop us at every step of the way. So what we have to do is we have to be diligent. Here's your solution, Bob. Diligence. We know we're going to have a fight just trying to help people. Anybody that tries to help people, they get assassinated. They get locked up. You know, all of our leaders die or go to jail. So we're going to have to be discreet. We're going to have to organize. And we're going to have to do this in such a manner that is almost covert. And watch what it does for the rest of the community, right? Mm-hmm. There's a community, I believe it's Norway, where every person's backyard is a garden and they grow one thing and they all share.
That's dope.
Air quality is fire. Lakes are running. Salmon is killing every year. Mountain range is beautiful. And they just grow their own food. Ain't no Walmarts going there. Ain't no McDonald's out there. None of that. None of that.
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
We can
do
that.
That's so cool. Yes,
we
can.
We have to shift our culture to believe in that being smart, being intelligent is way cooler than owning 250 pairs of Jordans.
We the cool people if you didn't know that.
That's it.
We cool. Again,
that's all. Okay.
Thank you. And thank you to our listeners. We welcome your questions and feedback. You can learn more about the Climate Hour at climatehour.net. That's climatehour.net. Where can people go to learn more about your work, Spencer?
So I have a podcast coming out that will be called Out Loud with Major Facts. We'll be talking about different different social issues, different economic issues, political issues, breaking down things into a much more understandable platform rather than this PC culture that our politicians like to use, all a whole bunch of words while they defund our education system, knowing that people don't understand them. So I want to break it down in a much more understandable way so people know who to be angry at, because everybody wants to be mad, but I feel like we're just mad at the wrong things.
Nicolette, where do you want to send people for your work?
We would like to send people to kcufc.org to learn more about the Kansas City Urban Farm Co-op. I also invite people to please research the KC Reparations Coalition. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you. This is the Climate Hour. I'm your host, Bob Grove.